You're about to enjoy TryHards, courtesy of MTGCast.com. If you enjoy TryHards or anything else supplied by MTGCast, please make a donation. Whether it's recurring or one time, you can help offset the very real overhead of bringing you the best podcasts in magic every week. MTGCast at MTGCast.com.
There's always that big kind of mythical curve between 4 and 5.
It was kind of the anti-Hurley. It was great.
This card is hot fire.
Horrible, horrible errors that we're all guilty of.
No matter what deck you show, you off 80% of the people watching.
We talked about maybe the future of Magic.
I know Merfolk players basically had a heart attack.
This isn't going to be able to shake up the format.
Bad, bad, bad.
Oh, you brave soul, welcome to the future. Casting from the new year, it's the tryhards, the same old three of us. I'm Sean, he's Brian, and he's Matt, and we can't wait to kick off 2018 with you. Coming up, a look at what makes for a good tournament scene. We'll figure out metas heading into the new year, and why one tournament may have missed the mark by laying out their season one the way they did. What's getting us excited for our rivals, and should we be looking past this summer in Magic to find out what the future may hold? It's all in this episode of Tryhards. Matt, you've spent the most time in the future, that is 2018 in the Eastern time zone. What are you drinking in this new, daring future?
Nothing special, really. I've just got an Oktoberfest here. We're actually going to go catch a movie tonight, and we did some drinking last night, so I'm taking it a little easy.
Well, I had to work yesterday on New Year's Eve, not late into the night, but we ended up playing it pretty close to the vest that evening, so I saved this treat for the cast today, and I'm pretty excited about it. The Ballast Point Peanut Butter Victory at Sea Imperial Porter. It is delicious. The girlfriend doesn't like peanut butter, but even she was like, that's not bad. I gave her the first taste of it. Peanut Butter Victory at Sea Imperial Porter with me in Command Central today. Brian, what do you have?
You guys know that I like to grab a little bit of beer from wherever I'm traveling to, and we just got back from the great state of Iowa. I was able to pick up some Millstream out of Amana, Iowa. They make a Schildbrau Amber, which is a Vienna-style lager that is absolutely one of my favorites. So picked up a bunch of that, and I am slowly making my way through the umpteen bottles still left in the fridge. So the Schildbrau on New Year's Day is what is slaking my thirst.
It sounds like you've got enough Schildbrau to get you through all the Magic that you recently played. How'd that go for you?
You know what? I actually got to sling some cards this weekend. I couldn't believe
what?
It. Yes, shockingly. Huh? Shockingly, this guy did. Now, I must say, this wasn't an organized tournament. I had gone down. We got home Saturday from all the vacation, St. Louis up to Iowa, et cetera, et cetera. Saturday was going to be the last day for Stone Alley Books and Collectibles. As I mentioned on the cast last week, is closing on December 30th. So after we got home, did a bunch of stuff, I said, hey, I got to go down to the shop, see what everybody's up to, because they were having the Ixalan Store Championship that day. So I knew I'd see a bunch of guys there. And sure enough, the tournament had started. They were in round 3 of 4, and so I just kind of hung out. And in between rounds, if they get over early enough, I said, hey, anybody got a modern deck? So I was playing Modern Burn, so I got in 2 games against Lantern Control. We went 1-1 before he had to go back to actually playing a real sanctioned Magic tournament. But it was pretty fun to actually sit down and, you know, crack fetches and get in with my goblin guides and, you know, just absolutely burn him out.
Matt, I'm not sure what the bigger upset is, that Brian actually played physical Magic cards this week, or that he had time to play 2 games against Lantern Control between the rounds of a sanctioned tournament that was going on at the same time.
You were not the only ones who maybe pointed that out. They're like, wait a minute, you just played against Lantern Control, and how many games did you play? And
I'm well,
like,
yeah, when you said games. That, I just assumed that Burn won both. That's what you'd have time to do. But when you said Lantern Control won one, I was like, wait a minute.
We didn't sideboard at all. And so the second game, he dropped an Ensnaring Bridge and said, go. And I was like, okay, well, when's that clock coming in? So I just kind of sat there and twiddled for a couple couple minutes and said, you need to go back to your match, don't you? Yeah, we'll just call this one yours, and if we can play again, we will, which we never got a chance to, but that's fine.
That sounds very cool. I'm glad you got to wrap up the shop's run with a little bit of magic being played over the weekend. I had to skip both my opportunities to play this weekend. One, I skipped as a conscientious objector, and the other one I was taking down Christmas ornaments for. Our F&M was the unsets allowed EDH format. I was a conscientious objector on that one. And then Saturday for the Ixalan Store Championships, we were taking down Christmas here at the house, so I didn't get a chance to get there. Matt, I know you got a chance to play and got a chance to walk the stream out for the second time. Other than your just below the bell curve actual play, how'd the stream go for you?
Technically, the stream went very well. There was a lot of people actually playing. I did it yesterday, which would have been New Year's Eve. Played Nick Fitz through a Legacy League. Not Nick's Fit, but the actual Nick Fit, the Jund Scapeshift one. I just completely screwed up my my play. I mean, it was awful. I got made fun of a little bit, more than a little bit, in fact. That's all I really have to say about that.
You were playing Nick Fit, not Nick's Fit, I saw. I wasn't able to hop on, obviously. So what was your horrible, horrible errors that we're all guilty of that you got reamed for?
Turn one, I needed a Cabal Therapy and Veteran Explorer, and I fetched the Badlands instead of a Bayou. And that was just a misclick. Game two of the same match, I also misfetched as well. And then another match, I actually had the kill on board and screwed up with my Burning Wish, and I tapped the wrong mana, so I actually was unable to play the winning Scapeshift, and I knew what was in his hand. So a big part of it was I haven't played that in a few weeks. Since I haven't played it in a few weeks, I actually was used to Nyx Fit. I also Green Sun for zero. I don't have Dryad Arbors in the deck that's in Nyx Fit, so I Green Sun for zero for absolutely no reason. That's exactly what I did.
High-profile streams of pro players draw an audience, one for entertainment and two for the value of learning. I'm wondering if we're approaching almost a meta shift on Twitch with some streamers, that there are some that will be done for comedy. And would you be comfortable being the canary in the coal mine, Matt, to figure out if a stream for comedy is actually going to be worthwhile?
Oh, yeah, I would mind doing that. I'm doing it a little bit to train myself. I think it makes me a better Magic player. Train myself on that. Bring out the fans a little bit. You don't see a lot of people playing Legacy much, so I'd like to focus on that Legacy as much as I possibly can as well.
Now, I said that to be a little bit of an a-hole on purpose, because I knew Matt would take it and run with it, but you have to make mistakes in order to learn from them, and being unafraid to make those mistakes in a public forum is a big evolution, not only as a human being, but as a player, and being open to those critiques as well. So, Matt, congratulations on doing that. I know the stream is just going to get better, and frankly, as you get used to the stream, your play is going to rise to the level that I know you can play at, just as you get used to managing the stream and playing at the same time. We'll look forward to more of that, and we'll have a link posted on the Patreon page at patreon.com/tryhard. Speaking of Patreons, it's time for our very first raffle of the year. What better way to begin the new year of 2018 than giving some of Matt's stuff away? On the last show, Matt said that he wanted to trim the collection, so until further notice, every raffle will feature something from Matt.
Whoa.
That's not what we agreed on?
You're crazy with it now.
Well, considering the fact that what you're giving away this week, I thought we were already at the bottom of the barrel.
Yeah, he's going to be giving away, like, crappy, terribly played, revised basic lands.
Yeah, some
like
basic land with a little foil eye symbol on it. I don't know what that's all about. this week, foil Vines of the Vastwood. Matt has put up a foil Vines of the Vastwood. Matt, this seems pretty niche. Why did you select this one?
This is the original Zendikar foil. I really like this picture, and I hate the foil that came out of on the reprint from the Modern Masters. So I'm sure that somebody out there wants to play some Infect, either Modern or Legacy. Since that's the case, somebody's going to get a foil one to get them started.
Yeah, this is one of the cards that shows up in both versions of the deck, so you can port it from one to the other. Very cool. We have 48 eligibles. While Matt opens up that list, I've got some great news. We did our gift exchange a couple shows ago here on Tryhards, and what Brian got for Matt and I, the test run, the beta, if you will, of the Tryhards playmat has been reviewed and been accepted, and we are now ordering those playmats for distribution. So if you are a Hart of Famer, then you're going to be included on that merch. That is already included as a Hart of Famer on what you're doing to help this show. So if you're a Hart of Famer, we're going to have details on when those come in and be getting your shipping addresses, because they're going to be coming to you no charge. If you want to be in on all of our merch at no charge, check out the Patreon page. If you're a Hart of Famer, everything we do for merch, you get a first run of, no additional charge in that membership level. And if you're not a Hart of Famer, well, maybe now's the time to upgrade. And if you don't get one pre-planned for you as a Hart of Famer, we'll have those for sale and more details coming as well as those come in. I posted a picture on the Patreon page. They look amazing. We're just considering whether or not we're going to stick with that play mat finish or maybe a different finish to the mat and then go from there. So more details coming up very soon. Matt, I've hit the randomizer, and this is fitting. I wouldn't have cheated if this didn't happen. Okay, maybe I would have for theatricality, but this actually happened. On the first day of the year, we have number one.
Jose Gonzalez.
Jose Gonzalez, our winner this week. You'll be picking up a foil Vines of the Vastwood. Jose, thank you so much for being a patron. We appreciate the support and hope you enjoy a part of Matt's collection as you help him divest all of that extra cardboard that he has laying around the office. Foil Vines of the Vastwood coming your way. Jose, if you plan to play Modern on any of the top-level circuits in the next 6 months, well, that's going to arrive just in time. Gentlemen, the focus seems to be on Modern as we roll into the new year. Coming up this weekend, the first weekend of January, the 5th through the 7th, two tournaments will be held. GP Santa Clara, which is Team Trios, and SCG kicks off their Season 1 in Columbus with a Modern main event and a Modern and Legacy Classic. Now, we're going to talk about the ramifications of these choices, but I want to start with Santa Clara. This is a Team Trios event. Did you know that by the time Pro Tour 25th anniversary hits on the first weekend of August, there will have been double-digit GPs or SCGs with the Team Trio format? Matt, is this format the fad of 2018 just because of the Pro Tour that's ahead of us on the calendar? Or is this something that players love? Playing a game that's designed to be played individually as a team, and we may see more of this format going forward for the future of Magic.
You know, I love these ideas of these Team Trios. They were super popular, and you could see that SCG kind of wheeled on the spot to make these team events happen. So I think it's going to be a little bit of a fad. I mean, since they were so rare before, I think that's part of why people were like, oh my gosh, I want this Team Trio so bad. I think once people get this taste of Team Trios, then they're going to say, hey, I want this all the time.
Brian, is this a huge advantage for the pros that can use this as sort of a mini research pod for their pro team? Because you can have up to six on those pro teams for the Pro Tour, play 3-3. Are the pros just going to be at that much of an advantage because they can all travel to these events? Or will we see some fluctuations in teams, do you think, as travel and time and other necessities just eat into everyone's life schedule over the next 8 months?
I think the answer to that is both. I think you're going to see a definite benefit from people playing in these Team Trio tournaments. But because they can have up to six, I think there's going to be some switching around in things, which is not necessarily a bad thing. There's plenty of really, really good players out there. Not in a negative way to say this at all. It is kind of an inbred community. And so people can kind of bounce from team to team just on any given weekend because they're ultimately looking for personal points as well as team points.
So if the tryhards were playing as a team at GP Santa Clara this weekend, it would most likely break down like this. Matt would play Legacy, Brian would be on Modern, and I'd try to find something to play in Standard. Brian, with the Modern format probably being yours if we were in California this weekend, what do you think of the metagame? There's been quite a bit of innovation, and what deck would you be on if we were looking for wins?
Right now, I feel like part of the blessing and the curse of having such a healthy format as Modern is that you've got so many good decks that could take down the tournament. There's not like a clear favorite, I think. Modern has got so many good decks that could top eight. I'm guessing there's going to be at least six different variants in the top eight. So if I was playing this weekend, I think I would probably still run Eldrazi Tron or maybe a green black Tron. I tell you what, second would be maybe the Mardu Pyromancer that Michael Braverman's put up some numbers with, that kind of Mardu build that's so near and dear to my heart. I would love to run that. He took first place at a RPTQ not too long ago. It's a really, really good list. I think it's positioned well. But I can't fail to mention some of the new Living Endex, the Mono Blue Living Endex that Pascal Maynard has been streaming about, that a lot of people have been kind of on lately. I don't think the deck is tuned nearly as finely as it could be yet, admittedly, by everybody who's running it, but it is very, very powerful. As Foretold is a silly Magic card, and it can cause you to do some really, really broken things, and it can be very, very resilient to a lot of different deck styles, I should say. So that is definitely something that should be on people's radar. The other thing that I would say that I would probably want to take is probably a Jeskai Control deck. I think if you're really good at piloting Jeskai Control, that is a deck that can rise to the top very quickly, just because you've got good matchup against so many things, and the counter magic package puts you favorable against a lot of different types of decks. So it's not a cop-out. It's just because of the health of the format, like I said. I would say play what you know. Play what you're comfortable playing. So right now, that for me would be a Tron variant.
I've had the honor of being run over by Braverman in a previous tournament. I believe it was SCG St. Louis. So he is one of the power players in the format. But this is a format that has seen a lot of innovation over the last 6 to 8 months. Whether it's Brendan DeCandio, Todd Stevens, Jeff Hoogland, is now the time that we're going to see innovations, Brian? Or are people going to start holding their modern tech close to the vest, considering that the next Pro Tour is modern?
That's a really good question. I think because modern is so wide open, I don't think people are going to be that secretive about what they're going to play. I really think that it may be more out there and just kind of say, come and get me. It's not like you have to hate out one or two decks in the format. You have to be aware of 6, 7, 8 different archetypes. And that's really, really tough. If you're going to sideboard to beat Blue-Red Gift Storm, which is one of the top decks in the format, then you're not going to have good game against some of the other archetypes. And that's just the way it goes. So it's a lot less important to kind of hide your tech, so to speak. But I think getting the reps with that deck and making sure you're very adept at it is more important. So I don't expect a lot of people to be hiding tech. I'll be surprised to see how that plays out with the team trios and then moving into the modern Pro Tour in February.
Yeah, it'll be interesting this weekend. If I was on Standard, I'd have the exact opposite problem that Brian just described for Modern. Not quite so wide open a metagame. No, the Rug Energy deck is still the king of the format by a long way. Sure, it has plenty of usurpers to the throne. You look at Mono Red Aggro in the form of Ramunap Red. I've seen some really intriguing blue-white aggro lists using Heart of Kieran floating around. I just don't know if they're ready for prime time yet. You have the blue-white cycling list. You have a bevy of other sort of tier two strategies. I think that a blue-black control list could be primed to rise up on this occasion. You know what the field is going to be. Most of the teams are going to play the strongest deck. And when control knows what the opposition is, that's when it's primed to do its best. And I think you can put blue-black control together with Sensor, with Gearhulk, with Fatal Push, with all of these other tools that you have available now to beat one deck. If 60% of the room is going to be Rug Energy, you can definitely engineer a deck that will prey on that and then has good game against other decks after sideboarding. So I think blue-black control, maybe the surprise splash, and it would be what I would be looking at if we were playing in Santa Clara this weekend. Matt, you have the legacy seat for this fictional tryhards team trio. I figure you're playing Food Chain. How would you change your very successful deck for what you would anticipate the metagame to be?
You know, actually, I probably wouldn't play Food Chain, only because I've ran through quite a bit, and I don't think it can compete with all these, with the Grixis Delvers, all the four-color Delver variants. The deck I've been playing lately, which was the Nykvit deck, the Jund Nykvit I played yesterday, that's what I would play. I think it has a great Delver matchup. The metagame is also very slow right now. There's not a lot of Storm out there. There's not a lot of Dredge. You got your Show and Tell variants, which are about the quickest decks that are out there. Matchup versus the Show and Tell is not the worst ever. It's not amazing, but it's not bad by any means. I would say I would definitely play the Jund Scapeshift Nykvit. our top decks are so much more powerful than the synergistic hand control that most of these four-color Delver variants are playing.
So if I boil that down into a nutshell, your read on Legacy is that it's moving toward the fair end of the spectrum and away from the broken end of the spectrum.
Absolutely, and I think that's where your Jund Nickfit style decks really are just shining right now.
Hurley, what do you think about lands right now in the metagame versus a Nickfit build that you've been working on and just kind of against those four color Grixis variants and things?
I think lands is pretty decent, actually. I haven't played enough lands in my life. I mean, to really say what their matchup is conclusively without going deep into the tank, I would definitely say that they're probably a good choice. And lands is kind of one of those matchups. I just don't think, unless you build something that's just specifically meant to kill lands, I honestly don't think that lands has, like, you know, it's just a dog matchup versus a lot of different decks. So, yeah, no, I mean, I think that's just always a solid choice. You have to be a special kind of player to play lands consistently all the time. The big minus for lands, and really, Sean, for, you know, your Reanimator deck, a lot of decks are now running main deck Diabolic Edict, and they're running multiples of them. So that could potentially be an issue there. But that's just something we'd have to go. You'd have to see. And, you know, if you get an early land start, it's just almost impossible for many places or many decks just to beat an early land start.
Yeah, Matt, you're absolutely right. And that is one of the main concerns that I have being on Reanimator right now. It's actually become a bigger problem than Deathrite Shaman, the amount of decks that are playing Diabolic Edict in the main. In fact, Edict is so good, it is soon going to be back in Standard. We're going to talk about that in just a minute. The SCG Tour kicks off this weekend in Columbus with a Modern main event and Modern and Legacy Classics. Guys, this reached up and grabbed me by the ears. Did you know that by the time SCG hosts their Season 1 Invitational June 8th through the 10th, that they, on their tour, will have hosted 6 Modern events, 1 Legacy Open, and 5 Team Trios? They will host 12 open events, and none of them, exactly 0, will have been Standard. The first invitational format is then a split between Modern and Standard. That feels a bit odd to me, that you're going to feature a format in your golden event at the end of the season that you did not see fit to include at any point on your top-level event on your tour leading up. Matt, is this just SCG striking while the iron is hot and having more team trios leading up to Pro Tour 25? Or is this a move away from a Standard format that people have roundly criticized here in the last 6 months?
I think it's a little bit of both. I mean, you know, if the format is not good, which a lot of people, you know, have said, it's not that the format is bad. They're just an obvious best deck. It very much plays out the same all the time. I think they just move away from it, and it's because that hits their pocketbook. So move away from it and feature stuff that people want to actually go and play.
Brian, by the time you get to the SCG Invitational, there will be a couple more sets released into Standard, and the format will probably have shifted a bit. But energy is still going to be omnipresent at that point. Would you be chagrined to have to play a format that was never brought to the forefront on this tour?
I don't know if I would be chagrined, because if I was in SCG shoes and people were criticizing me for not having Standard events, I would look at to exactly what you said and said, what are you talking about? We're having team constructed tournaments all throughout. We're having, you know, team constructed tournaments in Dallas. We're having one in Philly. We're having one in Cincinnati. We're having one in Atlanta. We're having one in Baltimore. Of course, there's going to be plenty of Standard being played, especially in the main open and then in the classic. So I think it's very defensible for that. I think the team trios has taken off at a rate that no one really expected, and it's a very, very popular format. I think SEG is rightly buying into that hype and trying to attract as many players as possible. We're going to still see plenty of Standard coverage when it's broken down. I don't think they're just going to kind of eschew the Standard coverage for the Modern and the Legacy events. People are going to be complaining about whatever decks they show on camera. But if there's some new tech and some new decks that crop up after Rivals is released, it's definitely going to get some camera time. I have no doubt about that. Standard is still the bread and butter of Magic, and we have to acknowledge that. Modern is a close second. I'm glad to see Legacy getting some love. But no, to answer your question, Sean, in a very roundabout way, I would not feel a little bit put down on just not having a standard open. I think the team constructed, you're going to have those people with good standard decks rise to the top.
Yeah, it's a little known fact, but according to Magic Player Math, if you have three different formats on a team, no matter what deck you show, you've off 80% of the people watching.
Yes, you have.
You'd think it would be two-thirds. Yes, at 67%, but it's actually 80% because you always make the wrong choice, according to Magic Players. So we'll see how this unfolds and whether or not Team Trios continues to be the hot format after Pro Tour 25 has come and gone at the beginning of August. Speaking of a standard format that may not be getting the love right now that many would hope, Rivals of Ixalan is right around the corner, and though the too early reviews said, this isn't going to be able to shake up the format, I understand that on one hand, but not on the other. Wizards certainly isn't going to print anything in Rivals that interacts in any way with energy. So energy will continue to be the elephant in the room. But now that we've had 30-some-odd, maybe even 40-some-odd, depending on when you listen to the cast and how many previews have been released, cards out in the wild, it seems that this set is bringing some real power to the format. What previews from Rivals of Ixalan have you excited? I'll lead things off. The mechanic that has me excited so far, we've seen on Tetzimach, Primal Death. If there is a Sean card, this may be it. It has the prey mechanic. That's what I'm terming it. You can basically forecast it. Oh, that's going way back into Magic history, kids. And you can put soon-to-be-dead counters on your opponent's creatures. This seems like so much fun because you can tell them it's coming. It's a 6/6 Death Toucher for 6 that, when it comes into play, kills all of the creatures that you've forecasted to put a death counter on. I think this makes for an interesting play pattern because aggro decks now know they're under a soon-coming Sword of Damocles because control decks can show this and force them into a certain play pattern and maybe not even play the card. So I think, Brian, you would be the next most likely person to play this card in a deck on this cast. To me, this brings up not only an interesting mechanic, but also an interesting wrinkle to the game once both players know that this card is in someone's hand.
The fact that it's legendary, I think, is really, really good from a game design standpoint. But the prey counter idea, just the fact that it's there, is, as you said, very, very worthwhile.
So, Brian, what card's sticking out to you as you start to review the few cards that have been previewed?
The one that I really, really like, and everybody knows I like the double-sided cards, is the Journey to Eternity. The black green, which is not my particular play style all the time, but it's a legendary enchantment aura enchant creature. When it dies, return it to the battlefield under your control, then return Journey to Entry to the battlefield transformed. It transforms into a legendary land, Atzal Cave of Eternity, where you can add a colorless or for 3, a black, a green, and tap it. Return target creature card from your graveyard to the battlefield, not to your hand, to the battlefield. That to me seems really, really fun to build around. I don't think it's going to be effective in standard. It just seems a little too slow, but it seems really, really fun if you can do this. And if you have a graveyard full of a bunch of big dinosaur creatures, returning those to the battlefield, especially with the Enter the Battlefield triggers, seems really, really good.
Yeah, this seems like the spiritual successor to every rock deck ever. Like it's asymmetrical warfare. You killed my thing. Okay, I get to put it back into play, and now I can put other stuff into play. Matt, I know you like those decks. Is Journey to Eternity on your radar? And if it's not blowing the wind in your sails, what is?
Blowing something in my sails, because this card is hot fire. Brian, you actually also missed, I think, that you can tap it for 1 mana of any color on the flip side.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, of any color. Yeah.
Yep. I'm not going to go out on a limb and say that this is Legacy playable.
Yeah, you are. You want
to. No, wait a minute. No. This is what Legacy Nickfit has been looking for, because you have all the EBT creatures that are more powerful than the creatures your opponents are playing, and now you can directly get them back without them being countered. They need a stifle effect. I think this is exactly what Nickfit wants.
I think it's worth playing around in the Legacy space. where I was going to go with that was that I also do think that this is going to see some testing in the modern space too, because right now Legacy, like we talked about earlier, it does sit in a place where this would be a good card. Abrupt Decay is running around. You know, this can be Abrupt Decay before it flips. All I got to say is wowza, because this is a very powerful card, and I also like it's rare. I'm not going to lie and say that when I go up to Indy to play side events and I end up probably playing a little Legacy, that I'm not going to try to find a place in Nykvit for this. So I do agree with you on that, Sean. There's actually two cards that are super interesting to me. One is this Tinder Shoot Dryad. It's a 2/2 for 5 mana with the Ascend mechanic. This Ascend mechanic seems really interesting, but it's basically if you control 10 or more permanents, you get the City's Blessing for the rest of the game. This has, at the beginning of each upkeep, create a 1/1 green Saperlane token. If you have the City's Blessing, all Saperlanes get +2/+2. So depending on what Saperlanes come out, Saperlane creators come out of Rivals, that could be a very powerful card. I know Merfolk players have basically had a heart attack when Kumena, Tyrant of Orozca, was spoiled. And Sean, I know you said you had really liked that Kumena, right?
Well, I think it's powerful. I've never played Merfolk in a sanctioned event, but for 3/1, a green and a blue, this is the only detraction from Legacy Merfolk, is they get the advantage of being a mono blue shell and playing an incredible concentration of basics. They're now going to have to move to a fetch land format if they're going to play Kumena, because it's 1/1 green and a blue. But for that, you get a 2/4 that says tap another untapped Merfolk you control. Kumena can't be blocked this turn. Also, tap 3 untapped Merfolk you control, draw a card. So we're getting into elves territory here. And then tap 5 untapped Merfolk you control, put a 1/1 counter on each Merfolk you control. We know there's already a Merfolk that's been printed for 4 that says creatures you control with counters on them can't be blocked. So Merfolk could move into more of the combo style format of elves with this printing of Kumena. I think it may change the deck. It doesn't slide into exactly what Legacy Merfolk does now, Brian, but I think it could change the deck and make it almost a blue-based elves deck, and that thought is just giving me shivers right now.
There's a real easy answer for this. Just run Cavern of Souls in your Merfolk deck, and there you got the mana you need. So,
well, they already,
you know,
do that.
Counterable Merfolk.
Right. They already
yes,
do
exactly.
That.
So, yeah, so you've already got your green at your disposal. So to get 1 green out of there, granted, you're right, you probably would want to play 1 fetch, you know, some Misty Rainforest or something to go get a Trop, or just to go get a basic forest that can't be wastelanded, etc. I think it's probably worth it to try it. It's such a streamlined list, and I bet there's some Merfolk players out there who are just shaking their head going, no, that's not what we do. I get it, but this card is very, very powerful, very, very fun, and it looks really, really strong in a Legacy deck. It just seems like it's screaming for someone to try it out.
I think we're going to see this since in Modern a lot, because I don't think Legacy goes wide enough. The Legacy Merfolk goes wide enough to fully take advantage of this. But I do think the blue-green Merfolk deck in Modern got a huge leg up with this one, and I can't wait to see that one played. Sean, I'm going to pass you one card here, and I want you to tell me how powerful you think it is. Enter the Unknown. It's a sorcery for 1 green. You may play an additional land this turn, and target creature you control explores.
I love the fact that we think alike. This was on my list of cards to watch. I don't know where this goes, but for 1 green, target creature you control explores, which means you get all your explore triggers over again if you are doing that in a dedicated, abusable fashion. You also get in green, top of library selection, and then you get the little text that says, play an additional land. This is something we're used to from the card Explore, where you draw a card and get to play an additional land. But now that your creature explores, you get to, if it's a land on top, draw that land on the Explore mechanic and then put it into play. So it serves as both card selection and ramp in a color that doesn't usually get that. So I don't know what deck it fits in right now, but the fact that it's a single green, it's on my radar of things to watch. So Enter the Unknown, very much a card that I'm going to keep my eye on. In that same category, Vona's Hunger. We talked earlier about Diabolic Edict. Well, for three, it's coming back to standard with the upside of, and it's still an instant, if you have the Blessing of the City, then instead of sacrificing one creature, your opponent sacrifices half their creatures. We don't know yet what Blessing of the City is going to be. It's probably something fantastic, considering everything you have to do to work up to that point. But in standard, to have a non-targetable sacrifice outlet when the Hydra, the energy Hydra, is such a big part of the Rug energy deck with Hexproof, this is going to be, I think, a big player that's adopted. And the fact that it's three, you might be thinking, well, Diabolic Edict is two, this is three. You have to analyze it in the context of the format that it's in. The fact that it's three and that the Hydra is four means that when you're on the draw against the Hydra, the turn they play the Hydra, if you keep the board clear, you get the Hydra automatically before you untap. And this is enormously powerful. And I think it's one of the reasons that black-based or blue-black-based control decks may be on the rise against Rug Energy. So I think that right now, this is the card that I'm watching, Vona's Hunger. This could have the biggest impact in standard against Rug Energy. Maybe not against anything else, but I think it might be one of the pieces that starts to take apart Rug Energy going forward. Guys, Form of the Dinosaur I found fun. A modern update to Form of the Dragon, where you had flying and were a 5-5. Now you get to be a 15-15 and fight with your opponent each turn. Is it top-tier playable? Maybe not. Is this going to be seen in EDH decks and kitchen table decks everywhere? I think so. So that'll be fun to see Form of the Dinosaur being a thing. So let's get down to it. The elephant in the room. Angrath, the Flame Chained. I've been playing around with a black-red control deck, a black-red-white control deck, a Jund control deck, and the thing that I've been missing in those colors, because I don't have blue, is an ongoing card advantage engine. Every once in a while, they'll give it to you in green, based around a creature that is still susceptible to being killed. But Angrath, the Flame Chained, is everything that a control deck would want. For five, you get a Planeswalker that enters the battlefield with four loyalty. Plus one, each opponent discards a card and loses two life. This is key because sometimes control decks lack a way to win the game that is easily sustainable. So it's not only a card advantage engine, but it's a clock. Minus three. Gain control of target creature until the end of turn. Untap it. Okay, so it's a hijack mechanic. It gains haste, but here's the key. Sacrifice it at the beginning of the next end step if it's converted mana cost three or less. So all in one, it takes it, hits them with it, and then kills it if it's a small creature. And finally, the limit break at minus eight, each opponent loses life equal to the number of cards in his or her graveyard. We've seen mechanics like this before. They're not very often used, but if you're talking about a Planeswalker that is going to allow you to win the game, that might be something that gets used. All of us love Planeswalkers on this podcast. All of us love playing some form of either tempo or outright control. This is a Planeswalker at five mana that I think will be a big player going forward. These are onboard control colors. Without blue, you can't control the stack. But with black and red, you can control everything outside of enchantments that hit the board in standard. So I think Angrath has a huge, huge wave to make when he hits standard. Brian, am I completely off my rocker here, or is this going to be the chase card of Rivals?
Right now, it's the chase card of Rivals. Angrath is everything that you want out of your Planeswalker. It's value, 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 and there's not a whole lot of drawback. I mean, five, there's always that big kind of mythical curve between four and five. Chandra Torch of Defiance would not be nearly as good at five as it is at four. I think that's one of the reasons why it's almost broken in the format. It's one of those that's just so good, and that's why it's seeing play across multiple formats. Angrath, I think, is only going to be standard playable, perhaps modern playable, depending on what happens to card design going forward. But in standard, this card is going to see some play. Coming in where each opponent discards a card and loses two life. Even for five, that seems pretty good if it only sticks around a turn, if your opponent is spending resources to get rid of Angrath. That seems really good. And if it sticks around even more than that, Katie bar the door, that's just game over to me. It seems way, way too good to start stealing your opponent's creatures, hitting them with it, Sean. And like you said, then they have to lose it. That seems way, way too much of a tempo swing for people to recover.
Matt, is a card that's almost an automatic 2-for-1 in every situation good enough in red-black at 5 mana?
So I think this card is very good. Do you think it doesn't always protect itself, if that's odd, kind of an odd thing to say there? It kind of does, but this card loses a lot of its tempo later in the game. So, you know, if you top deck this, it doesn't always get you out of kind of the hole you're in, unless your opponent has, like, you know, a big creature or something like that, and you can just win on the spot there. So it's very powerful on the surface. I'm just not sure what metagame is going to welcome this into it, and I do absolutely love the love the ability to be able to steal stuff, and I love it on turn, you know, five or whenever you can ramp into it as well.
Should be interesting to see how Rivals impacts Standard and whether or not some of these cards can take down the energy menace that has been making this, I'm not going to say stale, but a Cobblade-like format that we've all been experiencing lately. That brings us up to this week's In the Elevator. Matt, may once again impact Standard. Why are you picking this particular card, and is the elevator going up or down?
Kopala, Warden of Waves. I like this because of Merfolk. The new Merfolk that we talked about earlier, that's going to drive a lot of interest in Merfolk. This card's under $1. The foils are about $4. I think in Standard, you're going to see Merfolk decks come about. This isn't going to be a blowout every single time, but just being able to protect your Merfolk and doing everything with it, be fantastic. So pick these up anywhere under $1 as trade throw-ins or just throw-ins in general. We're going to have a Merfolk deck coming in Standard.
Warden of Waves, getting a legacy playable buddy in Silvergill Adept, now back into the Standard format as well. We'll see where this goes. That brings us up to this week's 3 minutes to brew on Tryhards. Brian, you're ready to get modern. What is it that's going to take us into the future?
It is the first of the year, everyone. Everyone's got their New Year's resolution. So what everyone is wanting to do is to get out of their bad habits and restore balance to their lives. What I've been seeing on a lot of streams, Pathco Maynard has been streaming it, the Modern Blue Living Index, just really goes to show how powerful As Foretold is. The As Foretold card is going to just abuse suspend cards that do powerful things with zero casting cost. Living End falls into that category. Hypergenesis falls into that category. Card I'm looking for is Restore Balance. And so thinking about Restore Balance with As Foretold as a card to brew with in Modern, I'd be very, very curious to see what you guys have. So let's review the stats. Restore Balance is white. It has a suspend 6 for 1 white mana. And when it resolves, each player chooses a number of lands he or she controls equal to the number of lands controlled by the player who controls the fewest, then sacrifices the rest. Players sacrifice creatures and discard cards the same way. Does this have any game in Modern going forward, or are we just going to see As Foretold be an engine for Living End?
I really like the whole As Foretold idea. And I have played against that Living End deck quite a few times. I ran around with it. In fact, I was going to make it my Modern deck for quite a while, mainly because it runs red-white, and now it runs red-white-blue, so I could cast a Johnny and all kinds of fun stuff. There's room here. There's definitely room here somewhere. Don't know where it's going to be. And this is a card that's very, very difficult to reprint. I don't think they'll ever put this within, like a Standard environment. It's an interesting card, and I do think it's got a good place in Modern somewhere. I just don't know where that is, and I'm not sure if the old Restore Balance deck where you cast all the, I don't remember what they're called, but they're like the monuments where you have to pay one when they come into play, otherwise they bounce. Those were kind of oddball things, and I'm not sure if it's that format, but I do think Restore Balance has a lot of room, especially, with like the greater Gargadon style decks. As Foretold might be the card that put it over the top.
Matt, I think it's interesting what you said. To me, the best part about Restore Balance is the artwork, without a doubt. It's the original knight from Balance with the sword with the scales sort of half buried in the sand. So the question is, can you find a way to abuse this in Modern? So many of the spells that you can cascade into have been banned in the format that finding a way to use Restore Balance is, I think, the crux to the deck. If we rely on As Foretold, that means we're starting with a blue-white base. To me, if you're starting with a blue-white base, you're talking about control. And there's only two cards. Okay, let's be honest. The key two cards. But two cards that are banned from the standard menace at one point, Callblade. I would find a way to build this into a modern version of a Callblade-style draw-go shell. Now, while you don't have Mind Sculptor and you don't have Stoneforge, you do have Gifts Ungiven. You have a number of other things. Maybe you stretch out and include black and bring back the Solar Flare archetype and start reanimating Sun Titan and abusing it that way. Once you have your deck set up to perform asymmetrical warfare, it becomes an increasingly potent mechanic to use. This is why Pox decks or 8-rack decks in Modern are so good, because they fight a one-sided battle. So I think Restore Balance probably falls along those lines.
Yeah, I agree with you there. It's one of those things, and Sean, I think you're right. The control decks have to come kind of a long way to get to this, because it does such a very specific thing, and it might not be in the caster's best interest to play it all the time. You got to kind of wait around and things to get full value out of it. I think As Foretold is going to open up a lot of deck building varieties. And whether it's Restore Balance, whether it's something like Living End, just kind of, you know, having its day in the sun until people respond to it, I think As Foretold is going to be an interesting card to abuse the suspend mechanic for sure.
That was kind of a 2-for-1 on that 3 minutes to brew. We did Restore Balance, but we did it in the context of As Foretold. So take that, go forth, and multiply your unfair modern advantages in every way that you can. That brings us up to what we did to get better at Magic this week. Brian, what'd you do to get better?
Hanging out with guys after the tournament on Saturday. We went out and grabbed a beer and just kind of talked about maybe the future of Magic. We got some good news from kind of the mothership up in the Quad Cities that said that for the foreseeable future, everything is going to be happening at the store just like we're used to. There is a Rivals of Ixalan pre-release happening at For the Win in Galesburg, so I'm very, very happy about that. What the long-term implications are, we still don't know. But for right now, I'm in a really, really good spot, knowing that I'll be able to play Magic in a local environment going forward. So something like this causes you to kind of evaluate what your game is, you know, situation is like. I know some people would probably just use it as an excuse to kind of bow out, whereas I use it as a reason to kind of double down and say, no, we've got to make sure we have a healthy gaming community in this town. It's too popular. We've got too many good players, and there's too much of a good community there doing good things. So all the other guys agreed with me there, and I'm looking forward to seeing what 2018 can bring.
I use this week for myself to get better by developing some super secret Samet tech. It's so secret that I can't even share it with you right now. A list may appear on the Patreon page, but until then, it's totally under wraps. Matt?
He means bad. Really bad.
It's quite possible. Considering my favorite card of the last, I'll say 2 years has been Oath of Nyssa, then yeah, it probably will be bad. Matt, what'd you do to get better at Magic?
I streamed again and recognized a bunch of my mistakes. I kind of joked with the people on the stream that I needed to put up a punk counter because it'll hit double digits. Focused on a deck, and I got back into the deck that I want to play, which I think is going to, like I said, going to be Nykvith. Jund, Scapeshift, Nykvith, because I do think that that has just a great matchup right now. So I'll continue to stream, and I think that that's the next step within becoming a great Magic player.
Oh, you brave soul. New year, same old podcast. Thanks for joining us. We'll see you next week on Tryhards.